and when you think in terms of products, it makes everything a lot more clear, I think, than when we think about business and we think about all the different, especially when you get to revenue and cost structure and stuff like that with a business. You can have all sorts of revenue streams in a business, but for a product, generally, there's only going to be 1 to 3 revenue streams. So it's a lot more manageable. So to start, I put the numbers up here to make it easier so that you guys understand the flow and the process behind something like this. So this is based off of cash conversion, which is an adaptation or evolution of another Canvas business model, Canvas, that came before it. But this one is particularly geared towards more tech startup kind of things. But I think it applies to just better to anybody starting something from scratch because it's more clear. So first you start with the customer segment. Who do you want to sell to? And again, in the context of actually selling a product, who do you plan to sell to? And then right below that is early adopters. So who are the people who are buying proof of concept alone? These are the people that are going to be the first to buy, the first to volunteer, the first to sign up, the first subscribers, the early birds, the however you want to call them. These are your essentially going to be the, they're the people that are probably most passionate about what you do, almost always. And if you're building an audience business where you actually have an audience that's listening to you, these people are already going to be in your audience, so they're going to be the first people to buy. So early adopters is key because that's how we're going to get our first few sales, whatever we're creating. So jumping over then to the problem, what is the problem that you're solving? And this, a lot of times people have assumptions of what the problem is, and the point of this is putting everything on paper and then actually going out and testing those assumptions. So when we get to Mike's, we'll see if he has a problem or if he has an assumption that we need to validate. And below here, and this actually deserves its own headline here, is what are the alternative solutions? So if you identify a problem, if it's really a problem, then people are probably dealing with it in some way, shape, or form. So what are they doing right now? What are the alternative solutions that are already out there? Maybe they're doing nothing. That's always an alternative solution. So while you think you might have a great idea or you identify a real problem in the marketplace, the alternative, doing nothing, might be the chosen way that people like to deal with that problem. And then you'll recognize pretty quickly that's not the type of business you want to build. So then from there, we move on to actually, I think these numbers are mixed up, but that's okay. So I'm going to go ahead and go to solution, actually. What's your solution? And are you sure this is something that people want? So I'm going to change this, actually.
Hey, Tom?
It's 3 and this is 4. Yeah.
Hey, I've muted everybody, FYI, so in case you're talking, you're wondering why can't they hear me. So if you've got a question, send it to me in the chat. I'll be checking through there and trying to pull stuff out. But I think it would be great, you know, as we're going through, we'll hit on the points, but we're going to give people a chance to talk about their cost structure, to talk about the problems in their business and the customer segments. We're going to use Mike, right, as the example, but we'll... If people want to volunteer, we'll be more than happy to talk to you about yours.
Yeah, and that one of the best ways to go through it is to believe in examples. So that's why we're going to go through Mike's. That's why I'm kind of going through this kind of quickly in the beginning, but then I really want to get into it with you guys and find out what your questions are about these different aspects and like what makes sense or what doesn't ultimately. So once you identify what the problem is, you want to go on to the solution. So what's your solution? And are you sure this is something that people want? Again, this is where a lot of assumptions come to a forefront when it comes to problem and solution. We think we know what the problem is, and then we think we know what the solution is. But I interviewed Andrew Warner of Mixergy, and I asked him what he learned from the 1,000 interviews he's done with entrepreneurs. And the thing he said to me, the number one thing he said he learned was, don't assume you know the problem and don't assume you know the solution. Which is to say that while a lot of people say you should be solving your own problems and things like that, oftentimes we're too close to what the problem is to recognize that maybe that solution isn't for everybody else. Maybe it's not a solution for the marketplace. So there's a big difference between what you think is the solution and what the marketplace will actually pay you for. So then moving on to the unique value proposition. So then this is I added this, and this is, I think some people get confused with this part, unique value proposition. So what makes your product or service unique? Why should we care? A better way to put it maybe, this is your 5-second product pitch, or this is your 5-second pitch, your elevator speech. Excuse me. And this is going to be something that actually, if you do this right, it's going to be something you can use for your landing page or for your sales page or for your website. And it should be just a sentence long, and it should tell me exactly why I should care in one sentence. And so this is actually really powerful for somebody like Joe who's doing sales pages, but for anybody, all of us, it'll be very powerful. But since Joe is doing sales pages right now, what he's creating with that headline that captures somebody's attention, is he's coming up with unique value propositions. So we'll get into that in more depth later. from here, we want to look into our sales channels. How will we actually acquire our first 100 customers or our first 1,000 customers? Probably more than that, probably first 10,000 customers. And in reality, what we mean sales, when we say channels, I mean sales or marketing channels. And this can be stuff like Facebook. So it can be Facebook. It can be blog, if you have a blog. It can be YouTube. These are all channels to reach people. You can also do mainstream media and things like that. So these are all just ways you plan to put your content out there and drive users back to buy your product or service. So now we hit on, this is actually 10, I think. I have to redo these numbers. This will be one of the last things we do. But anyway, so then we move on to revenue and cost structure. So revenue is going to be, when I talk about products, that's why it's important to think in terms of products. Don't think about the million different ways you're going to drive revenue. If we're thinking about this, think about just one product and maybe a few different ways you can price it. Or if you're going to be generating revenue from two or three revenue streams, that's fine too. But keep this can get overly complex, but the point is to keep it pretty simple. When you do cost structure, again, this can get overly complex. The best way to look at it is what's your time worth per month or something like that, especially if you're bootstrapping this. Or if you employ VAs and things like that, how much do they cost? Major overhead expenses, ideally monthly stuff. If you have a lot of sunk cost stuff, you can put that here too, but that's just the kind of cost of doing business. This cost structure here is more, has to do with what it costs to actually make this whole thing work, this whole canvas work, right? So it's more recurring costs. Now, how are you going to measure this? Once you put all this stuff out there, what's the metric that you care about? Is it going to be subscribers? Is it going to be paid customers? Is it going to be trial users? These are different ways to measure, and you only want to really measure one thing, one main thing as a form of criteria, because if you're just measuring one thing, you'll be better at actually changing that and making it work. So if you're worried about revenue and growth and signups, where do you actually put your time? But if you're only focusing, say, on revenue, then that's going to dictate the choices you make to make this a valuable business. So then we go over to these last two. I actually skipped ahead when I did UVP. This stuff should actually come at the end. But you go through your unfair advantage and your unique value proposition. That's at the end of the day. This is what we come up with once we developed everything else. But our unfair advantage, everybody kind of has that here. Being anybody in the military has that. You can leverage your military background to create an unfair advantage. And we can get into examples of this. And that could be something as simple as, like, if you're creating, for example, like if you went to MIT and you were starting a business, you could say it's built by an MIT engineer or something like that. And that would be an unfair advantage depending on what the product or service is in that marketplace. Well, since all of us are in the military, that's something we can use as an unfair advantage. You just have to figure out a way to add it into the product or service that you're offering in a unique way.
Well, one thing I love about unfair advantages is that oftentimes they're a combination of many things. I just published an article about this, talking about how one of your unfair advantages is that you've published books. You've been doing that. I have an unfair advantage in understanding video. Mix that with my veteran experience. Mix that with the fact that I'm a father of three, soon to be four children. All of a sudden in the style industry, that's actually an advantage because most guys blogging, talking about style are single, not married. So there's all these things which, I mean, if you're a woman in an industry that's dominated by men, or you're a man in an industry dominated by women, that's an unfair advantage. It's not a politically correct one. It's not politically correct for me to, I have a website called Black Man Style. I actually partner with a gentleman who's black. Now that's totally, maybe not PC. Some people may, you should have make it available to everyone. Well, it is available to anyone. Anyone can buy it, but it's geared towards a very specific segment. So if you've got, all of us have these unfair advantages, and they are unfair. It's not about being politically correct here or anything like that. It's about leveraging what no one else can replicate. And oftentimes it's when it becomes a combination of many things. I mean, we've got the veteran card, most of us, but we can't That's not going to be by itself. Like, people aren't just going to give you your business because I serve. Mm-hmm. It's going to be because you're a medical professional. You focus on physical therapy. Oh, and you happen to have served in the combat zone, and you've got plenty of friends at Walter Reed. So you've seen more limbs that have been blown off of soldier. You know, you've worked with more amputees than most doctors will ever see in a year, than most will ever see in their entire lifetime.
Exactly. So and that's a good point to bring up. And I guess when I say that we have the unique unfair advantage of being in the military just alone, and that clever way or creative way to apply it, it has to be in such a way that actually it actually matters. Yeah, just saying you're a veteran, okay, take it or leave it. But maybe in the context of what I do when it comes to marketing or sales, especially when I say insurgent publishing, right, I'm tying that into my military background and saying, hey, I've done this kind of stuff with especially my last unit, it was a special forces unit, so I dealt with a lot of that kind of different aspects of a counterinsurgency that are pretty high level stuff. But I can now say, hey, this is like techniques that the military uses, and I can apply that to book publishing or something like that, and that gives me that kind of unique angle that nobody else can really take from me. So then finally, you come up with your UVP, your unique value proposition. That's your 5-second pitch. So that's this Lean Canvas in a nutshell. Now I'm going to go ahead and pause real quick and see if we have any questions or comments so far, and then otherwise I'm going to move on to mics.
I'm unmuting everybody, so
yeah.
If you're making coffee, I can hear it. But any questions out there? Trevor, Mike, Marianne, good to have you out there. See you. Joe, Jeremy, how you doing? Constantine, Brian?
Brian wants to know where we can find this template.
I sent it out. All right, guys. Well, let's go ahead and maybe we should maybe we want to talk. So this is, we're going to dive into Mike's template, right?
Yep.
And so I know you guys have questions about revenue streams. Let me, you know, what do you think, Constantine? Why do we only focus on one revenue stream, or why did we say that? Why not go after 20?
Good question.
Or Mike, why did anyone?
You can start with something. Focus on this, kind of like what John says. That you focus one course until success. If you start going all kind of different directions, you can get screwed up really quick.
Dude, it sounds like we got a little bit of feedback. Do you guys hear that?
Yeah.
Okay. So just sorry, Mike. It was Constantine. It was a little bit. What you guys might want to have is a pair of headsets that prevents the sound loop. But that's an admin thing. We can get better. Don't worry, guys. We've got months to get better on that. But
yeah, I feel like somebody's next to like a snowplow or something like that, going driving by the window or something like that. It sounds like that's way too. Yeah.
But if I had to summarize it, it would be about focus. It would be, and here's what I call it. If I look at my board here and I'm looking at the different ways I'm monetizing, to be honest, 5 years ago, I had no idea that I would be monetizing these ways. So oftentimes your assumptions of how you're going to monetize are wrong. And I mean, it doesn't matter what you're doing. I mean, we got John Strout. I know he's not here tonight, but John, you know, he has a home inspection business. And I mean, there's proven ways that you monetize, and he can go, he's got a pretty good idea because he's part of a franchise, but most of us aren't going into a franchise. So where there isn't a proven way to monetize, and Mike's a perfect example. Mike, we have some pretty good assumptions of how you're going to monetize. And there are examples out there, products, coaching, advertising, but to be honest, you may find that you may get the government to step in. You may get a medical organization that they want to be associated with you. You may get a grant from a nonprofit who they recognize what you're doing and they want to make sure that you get $25,000, $50,000 a year to continue your work. Again, these are things that sometimes you can't see it until you're in the actual space.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Okay, so guys, I'm gonna now move on with mics and keep. Okay, I'm just checking the comments. Okay, if you guys have any questions, yeah, leave them in the comments, or feel free if you want to unmute yourself and then just speak up. But you know, however you want. But the key is here is interaction.
Joe's got a revenue stream question, really quick. Joe, what was that?
Yeah,
can you talk or? Joe, you,
yes,
you can
sorry,
go ahead and type it out if you want.
Froze up on me. Was thinking. Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. So this one's kind of a multi-angle question. I guess there's more than one aspect to it. When you said revenue stream, only focus on one. Is that one primary product? So what I'm saying is, like, I have a .com. Let's say I'm doing landing pages or sales pages, and I want to freelance that, and I'm going to build my business around that. But what about affiliate sales? Because you can throw that in the background, or maybe somebody comes to you and wants to do some quick consulting real quick. Are you going to throw that in there as well as a residual?
So this is a good question. And you can do one of two things. You can go ahead and put all those different revenue streams down on there, and that's fine. And you're going to, but at this point in the game, you're probably just going to be spitballing numbers and hoping they pan out. But that's why I make that disclaimer in the beginning and say to use it more like a product canvas for a specific product or service that you want to offer, your premium one, and to focus on that. Because if you're offering, say, let's say we're talking about landing pages here for just one moment, and your main revenue stream then is going to be from a premium service offering landing page design and implementation, high converting landing pages for business owners. Okay, awesome. Well, I'm going to pay for that, and I'm going to pay probably $1,000 to have that done. Or if I'm a bigger company, maybe I'll pay $5,000 or $10,000. So whatever, however you approach me in that way, for that particular sale, if that's your key source of income, that's what I would put as your revenue stream. And the other stuff I wouldn't necessarily put down on the canvas, although you can make a note that, well, you can also generate revenue on the back end through affiliates. So if you say, hey, if I'm going to do this page for you, I need you to purchase Optimized Press. Here's the link through mine. I guess that's one way you could do it. But the thing is, I would only put down the revenue streams that you're going to focus on. There's 100 different ways to actually drive new revenue from something. And this is also not a hard and fast thing. It doesn't mean that this is the only revenue stream you create, but just to say that it gives you a focal point of what to focus on for this canvas so you can actually measure. Antonio, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, there are other places that you can put the 20 different ways, but I would say before you can get affiliates, you want to have the product. Before you have the product, you want to make sure that you understand your customer. In order to understand your customer, you need to work, in my opinion, do some one-on-one consulting. It's going to be painful. It's not scalable, but that's the only way to really understand what are the pain points. What do they really pay you for? What do they get excited about? What are they willing to pay? I mean, if you have somebody and you charge them $1,000 to create that sales page and you do it in 2 days, and after it, they're excited about it, they love it, and somehow they let slip, or you get the understanding that, wow, they just took my sales page that they paid me $2,000 for, and he just made $40,000 in sales. Well, you can think either you undercharged, or you can think, you know, that's a great testimonial, and I'm going to create a little case study from this, and then I'll use that all within my product, and we can go back and forth. You can then offer to, or you can say that, hey, that's just the tip of the iceberg, because actually this guy, he just had a successful launch, but perhaps if we actually did an A-B test, which I can offer as a follow-up reoccurring revenue solution, that I would continue to do A-B testing for him for a month following, and we can create up to 5 to 10 different sales pages. That stuff right there, you don't see that initially if you just focus on trying to create the product. That's why I don't think you should just create a product unless you really understand the problem. And that's, you know, getting up there to part two up the top left-hand corner. And yeah, so that would be my thoughts on your particular issue, which you were speaking about.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right.
Okay. Yeah. And Joe, if you have any more questions, man, feel free to speak up and let us know or ask them as we go. And that goes for everybody. So I'm going to go ahead and go back to Mike's canvas and do a quick walkthrough of how he's identified what he's doing here. And Mike has this really solid idea in terms of, like, it's something that he's thought about. He's put quite a bit of thought into this. He's already starting to develop the podcast and everything like that around it. So if you're not quite to this level yet, that's okay. If you're like John, you already have a business that's driving revenue, this framework is still useful for that, because once you map out what you're already driving, what's already generating revenue, you can look into ways to expand it doing something like this. So this is a good one to start with, though. I think it's kind of in that middle ground where he hasn't launched yet, but I think he's got a good understanding of what he wants. So he identified that, first and foremost, he wants his customer segment to be veterans and military families who suffer from the effects of PTSD. And then he's identified that his early adopters are going to be the National Center for PTSD and Military Family Service Providers. And Mike, by the way, every now and then I'm going to ask you for clarification on these things. So first, right off the bat, I think this
is... Not a problem.
Yeah, I think this is narrow enough. I think this is good. I think one of the things you'll find, though, is that and this is a question, you might want to write this down, because everything about this page is to challenge assumptions. So my first question would be, is the veteran family the same as the veteran who suffers from PTSD? And specifically in terms of when we get to this, the problems that they deal with, are they the same problems? And is that truly the same segment, or are these slightly different segments, the actual veteran or the veteran family, and who are you speaking to primarily?
Okay, do you want me to go ahead and respond now, or just hold off?
Yeah, please do.
Yeah, actually, when I talked with John Lee about how to start this off, he suggested just to jump in with a 21 session, This is PTSD, etc., to kind of be something for the folks. That first 21 is going to be focused upon the warfighter, upon the veteran, the one who's been there. However, after that, I think I'm going to do another 21 session for families. They certainly come from the same issues, but they look at it from very different set of eyes. And once we get those, 42 things done, then what I want to try to do is on a regular basis, and we may go 3 to 5 sessions a week, where we'll be talking to both those audiences. Now, I've got to break down to see if I want to maybe do 3 a week, that's to the warfighter, 2 a week, that's to the families, but enough where they can share some same information, but also feel like I'm talking to them. For example, when I was stationed at Wounded Warrior Battalion, got to know a lot of wives of warfighters who were dealing with a lot of this stuff. Those women were the strongest women on the face of the earth. I mean, I got to take my hat off to them. So you're right in the fact that there really are two different audiences there, and I want to talk to them separately. However, they're in the same boat.
Right. So now, what I did is, as you were talking, I filled in a little bit more specific of what the solution is, because it's okay with the solution to not be, and with the stuff to actually get a little bit more detailed to a degree. This actually gives a good overview of the solution that you're providing in different ways, but then you can always feel free from this to get more specific. So 21-day session, let me say podcast session. Okay, cool. So that's what I did. So actually going back to this, tell me about your early adopters then. How do you know that these will be the first people to get on board what you're doing?
I was stationed at the chaplain school, and one of the things we do is a national training program for chaplains. And we worked with the National Center for PTSD 3 years running when I was there. I made some good contacts and some good networking, especially two individuals who are, one's a research fellow with the National Center for PTSD, another's a clinician. One's a former 06 Navy doc, and one's a researcher. Pretty good ties with them, so what I've talked to them is say, hey, I'd like to talk to you about this. You know, if this is something that you like, would you be on with that? They've been very positive. I certainly had to show them a finished product before they start putting it out. But the National Center for PTSD is kind of tied to the VA, and they've got two different arenas. One is research, and the other is delivery of care to the warfighters and veterans. And they are besieged, as you well have heard, you know, about a lot of folks who are asking for care that don't get it from the VA. So they're actively looking for more resources to give out to the warfighters. Military service providers, right now I'm MAR-4 Res, the Air Wing chaplain for the United States. I've also got contact with MLG and division. So I've got, maybe 40, 50 FROs, family readiness officers, you know, that I can talk to you from New Orleans, starting to put this out to them, and they're saying, hey, yeah, we'd like to hear this. Again, both of them have said, and quite clearly so, we got to vet this. We want to see what the product is. But yep, they are also looking for programming for resources to give to their families.
Awesome. Okay. I hope everybody was listening to that, because I thought that was awesome. Because you've already stepped outside the door, basically, gotten outside and maybe physically as well, but you went and actually spoke to people about this idea. You've already gotten that initial feedback. And it sounds like it's a resounding yes that people want the idea of what you're pitching. So that's good. And that's really important here, because as you're getting feedback, that's what's going to give you that's what's going to allow you to actually flesh this idea out into a concrete, actionable plan. So I want to move over here before we get over to the problem solution. Let's actually jump into channels, because I think it's connected here. So customer segment, we've identified early adopters. Your early adopters are going to be all the people you've already had that conversation with. So I would probably add that in here, but this is good for now, because you already know in the back of your head who those early adopters are. It's going to be anybody who you've already spoken to about this idea. Channels now is how you're going to reach them. You've actually kind of already spoke about that. It sounded like you said the connections you already have, but channels are how are you going to actually reach these people. So can you talk a little bit about that in particular, how you plan to reach them? You've already kind of touched on it.
Well, again, that's my Navy hat. I've been a MAR-4 res. The civilian hat I have is I have access and work in the same office that cares and provides for 200 chaplains across the armed forces. So we've got Army chaplains, Navy chaplains, Air Force chaplains. So as I push it out to those folks, they then hopefully will get it out to their particular service. In the Navy, I got that, no problem. I don't have as many contacts in the Army and the Air Force. However, with the buds that I do have, start pushing this out to them. They then get it to their family readiness group leaders as well as other clinicians to say, hey, this is another toolkit. Also, have been in contact with the Joint Chiefs of Staff. They've got a thing called Core Reintegration, which is out of the Joint Chiefs of Staff office. So it's not service specific, but it is DoD-wide. And working with them as well to be able to say, hey, this is something I'd like to give. Now, again, just because I say DOD, here it is, they're not going to jump on it necessarily. So still, I've got to prove myself and find stakeholders who have credibility to come up and say, hey, Marino's got some good stuff here. You should listen up.
Okay, cool. That's actually really good to know. And this is one of the important things about a canvas like this as well. It's a living document. So you're going to want to go ahead and flesh those kind of things out and identify what you perceive to be the best channels, so like DOD, Core Reintegration Program. And when you actually go and reach out to them, you're going to find that that's going to validate this assumption. Are these really the channels you're going to be able to use? They might turn you down, but you might find that just going through the chaplains is enough, or just going through family and friends is enough to spread the word, and that might become your main channel, or something entirely different, maybe something more online, something that kind of focus. But you're going to see that once you get out there and actually test these. But I think this is solid for now. So going over here, I think you've already described the problem in detail, exactly what it is. And these are the things that people... Yeah, go ahead.
I don't know. Is this really the problem? I mean, and let me ask, I mean, what I hear, Mike, is that you're going to be fighting, and I don't think it's changed too much in 10 years, but I mean, the military is a huge bureaucracy, and there's things that are screaming at them from different angles, and there's certain amount of resources. Now, it's... So for them to release the resources, and I'm thinking as a revenue stream, for you to be to get a premium sponsor, basically, which someone in the Department of Defense or something that, I mean, so what is their problem? I mean, if that would be your target, I mean, your customer, is it, and I'm just kind of challenging you here, is it really the end consumer? Because they're not really paying the veteran or the person there. If you look at this as a business model, they're receiving a great benefit from it, but who's going to possibly receiving a bigger benefit is someone in the Department of Defense who's ever in charge of the managing the problem of PTSD and being able to say in front of Congress that, hey, yeah, we've done, this is in our report, what we have done to work on the problem. In fact, we've even got this show. I mean, I don't know if they would highlight you. That'd be pretty cool. But for them, that may be, a problem that they're willing to pay and throw money at, and you actually get to do good using those resources. I mean, does that make sense?
It makes sense, but quite frankly, I haven't gone that direction. If it works, that's cool. In my experience, limited as it is, when you're talking to a fellow behind a desk who's in charge of PTSD care and all that good stuff, The deal is this. They've got to feed information up the chain. You know, what have I done? What do we know, et cetera. And so there's, I think there's one product that they give up the chain that the generals and the colonels and people want to hear. And the other chain is down the food chain of who's actually receiving the care. Working in different offices, I can tell you that those are two very different products. Mm-hmm. So when I'm talking about working with the DOD, what I'm attempting to do is hijack, quite frankly, their distribution, short-circuit it, because I'm not going to go through a general. I'm not going to ask a general, hey, dude, can I use your FRO? Screw it. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to talk to the FRO directly, because the FRO is the one that's actually giving stuff out on a regular basis. So quite frankly, the end user is my focus. Now, if DOD wants to jump on board, that's cool. I was thinking about this because, quite frankly, let's say I'm super-duper successful. People listen to my show, and then all of a sudden, they're better. Their symptoms decrease. Wow, that's great. Well, then will they continue to listen to me? They're not having the symptoms anymore, so maybe they won't need it. So maybe I'll need to have a bridge to say, hey, now that you're back on your feet again, hey, you know what? I could give you some different ideas, create an affiliate with, I don't know, Antonio Centeno, Tom, and be able to say, hey, now that you've got your feet back on the ground, you're not sure what to do, maybe here are some options you would want to go to and work at monetizing through affiliate or something else. That's just off the top of my head. But quite frankly, the DOD is not my target. Is it possible? I'm willing to consider that. But my target, as I've created this, is really the end user.
All right. Yeah. That's what I love. You know, the fact that you've got a, instead of, and hopefully you guys are taking notes. So Marianne, Constantine, Jeremy, Mike, you know, Trevor, as you guys hear, I mean, he didn't just have a, well, I haven't thought about that. It's a, you know, it's a, hey, I'm going to refute your answer, Antonio, and I'm going to, you know, show you exactly that you have no idea what you're talking about. And I've dove into this.
I love it. When it brings up, I'm actually glad you challenged him there, Antonio, because that's a good point. And something to be aware of as we go through the rest of this canvas.
Hey, and I'm telling you guys, kick the tires on this, man. You know, I'm going to be better for you guys challenging, so let's keep it going. No problem.
Yeah, for sure. And what you're going to find out is that this whole matrix here, this whole canvas, is interconnected. And as you go through it, as you kind of thrash out your plan, you're going to find that some things may add up or don't add up. And that changing one thing, like in the, if you recognize that this isn't the, if this is the wrong problem or this isn't the right solution, and you change it, that'll affect everything else to some degree. That's what you may find, at least. That's what I found through experience. But let's move on now to the problem of what people are doing right now about it. Right now, the solution that people are, or the way people are dealing with the problem right now is behavior cognition therapy, exposure therapy, EMDR, medication substance abuse, addictive habits. Okay. And I guess doing nothing could be another thing. Is that correct?
Certainly.
So I'm going to put that in there. I put that in there just for everybody to recognize that doing nothing is always an alternative solution to whatever you're offering. So, for example, while Antonio creates the best information out there on how to dress yourself well, I'm going to go ahead and choose to do nothing about that and continue to wear my plaid shirts and jeans. So, but that's an interesting, right? So you got to recognize that there's always going to be the choice to do nothing. And your potential customer segment can always choose to do nothing. So now moving on from that, I want to get to, go over here to solution, because we just identified the problem. So you said that your solution is information provided in a non-threatening manner that provides privacy while at the same time provide a community with stories of hope and successful treatment of PTSD. So now here's where I'm going to challenge you, Mike, and so you can go ahead and I'm excited for your answer. And then specifically you talked about a podcast, two podcast sessions. But here, do people with PTSD or families, and this is two separate groups, I think, and that's why I was talking about the segments and saying that maybe families are different than veterans, but how about the veterans that have PTSD? Do they want to be a part of a community? Do they want to be a part of a tribe?
Yes, and again, that from my time at Wounded Warrior, where we had a lot of guys dealing with PTSD. The thing is, PTSD pushes you to be very insular, forces you to be very private so that you don't talk. There's no community. It cuts you off from everything. And as you do that, you just kind of feel more and more things slipping through your fingers, and you feel very powerless. However, when you find out that someone else is feeling just like you do, someone else is getting screwed over just like you are, then all of a sudden there's an instant sense of community. Example, was over there one time and was getting cleaned up from PT, and two guys were talking, and one guy had been with been there for a while, and he was talking to a junior troop, and the kid said, "Hey, they want to give me medications because I can't sleep, and I don't think that's right." Other guy goes, "You're damn right it's not right. It just means you can't wake up from your nightmares." So medication's not the answer. When you're toe-to-toe with docs and practitioners, and they're trying to do their very best, okay, you're a PFC, you're a corporal, you're a sergeant. Okay, these are the smart eggheads, right? Whatever they say must be right. But you're the one in your shoes. And if you're able to talk to other people who feel that way, then all of a sudden, hey, I'm not the only one suffering from this. I'm not the only one questioning my treatment. I'm not the only one having problems with my wife. This all is part of what we're dealing with. So there is that community. At the same time, that does also give them a little bit of privacy in the fact that while they're listening to this podcast, nobody else can hear it. And kind of go back to John, the fact that while I'm listening to his podcast by myself when I'm on the treadmill or whatever I'm doing, I'm private. But at the same time, there's freaking thousands of people listening to John. And so when they talk about, what Fire Nation, that kind of stuff, you have privacy and you've got community at the same time, which really seems to me to be a very attractive option to those who are dealing with PTSD.
Okay. So one of the things that I think the reason I brought that up is to say that it's just an important thing to think through and challenge to see, and it sounds like you have experience, so you know what to challenge, whether this is an assumption or fact that people with PTSD do want a community, and they will seek it out. Well, actually, that's a different question. Will they seek it out?
They'll seek it out if they got trust and they know that you have experience. Vets know vets. I mean, you've seen all those things with stolen valor. You know, some jackass that puts on a uniform that says he's, a Marine Sergeant Major, while he's wearing Navy rating stuff. I mean, come on, really? They're looking for stuff. But at the same time, they're going to push you. Hey, do you know your crap? Do you know what you're talking about? And if you're able to establish that that authenticity and that that authority, then you're good to go. Part of what that authority hopefully for me will do is what I talk about. But then also, once people come on board with me, if I have, a staff sergeant and say, hey, Marino, he's got good crap. Go ahead and listen to him. If he's a good guy and he starts pushing my stuff, his Lance Corporals and Corporals going to do that. Or the VA, guy from Vietnam, starts saying, hey, that's good crap, man, and then he talks to another guy. So what I hope to do is start getting ambassadors, people who, I'm able to convert and say, hey, that's good stuff. And they go, hey, this crap's pretty decent. But they also know the proposition that it's community while at the same time being private.
Great, good stuff. So moving on here to what I want to head over to now, because I apologize for this. I think I put the wrong numbers on this in terms of the order that I like to go in, at least now. I'd like to go customer segment, early adopters, channels, then to problem, solution, and then I like we can go ahead and actually talk about this real quick. Well, let's just jump down to revenue streams. This is what I want to know. So you have question marks here. Are there revenue streams for this idea?
That's an awfully good question. Something I've really struggled with. As I start this, I'm starting it not. What got me going was not to make money. I just thought, hey, I need to get this out there. I want to get a message out there, and this is a cool way to do it. As I've worked more in terms of working with High Speed Low Drag and getting more into to podcasting, it seems that there are possible revenue streams. That's what I'm going to need a whole lot of help with. If I'm able to build this up, if I get a decent-sized tribe, I think that it would be attractive to a lot of advertisers. These are folks who are doing a lot of good stuff, as families, warriors, this type of thing. So it's possible advertising would be a possibility if I get a large group. If not, as a digital product, I can take a lot of the information I have, slap together an ebook, be able to start putting some information out that way. That's a possibility. Coaching, I should think that I want to stay in my lane. Now, I certainly can give people hope, et cetera. There may be questions where I'll say, hey, dude, you need to talk to a psychiatrist about this, counselor about this. I've got a certain set of skills, but I don't want to step outside that. But maybe once they do get to a certain point, then maybe I could look at coaching. All right, hey, you've come to the other side of the mountain here. All right, now your life's in front of you. What do you want to do? And be able to help lead them out.
Hey, Mike, who have you looked at, like, privately going after, I'm thinking a premium sponsor. I just connected on LinkedIn with the guy that's running Soldiers to Summit for Wells Fargo. Wells Fargo just pledged like $30 million over 3 years to help vets. And I mean, that's I was really impressed when I saw what they were doing. Tracked down the guy on LinkedIn that is in charge. I mean, I just sent him did a random connection. Turns out he's a retired Army major or something like that. But he's the guy in charge of where Wells Fargo is putting the money. I said, hey, I sent him my podcast over at High Speed Low Drag. I said, hey, we're doing great things. Just wanted to make you aware if there's anything I can do to support, let me know. So I don't know if that connection, but I know that there are businesses out there that are wanting to take, I mean, USAA is probably one of the most well-known examples. Many of us bank with USAA. They're involved in a lot of things, but I think there's a lot of companies that see this. Well, to be honest, they see it as actually it's a great PR, but they've also got a lot of veterans involved, and they want to be they want to show their workforce that, hey, we give back and we care about this. I mean, Home Depot is a great example of hires a lot of veterans, and they have places where they're looking to spend and to put funds to bring to help raise up projects like this.
That's very possible. Another thing, and I keep going back to this, but I learned so much. Wounded Warrior, we also had an office that worked just on job creation, just on people hooking up. And we had people with shiny suits stuff coming in from Booz Hamilton, Wells Fargo, whole nine yards. And then wanted to hire everybody. Well, actually, let's think about this. Okay, what's the Marine Corps made out of usually? What's their age range?
They're young.
18 to 22-year-old kids.
Yeah.
Some of them have college. Most of them don't. And so here's a Booz Hamilton guy coming, hey, I want to have a consultant or an accountant or, someone work for me. Well, this 18-year-old kid from Iowa has got 2 years of the Corps under his belt. He's got had some physical issues, so he's going to be getting out. He doesn't have the skill set to do that. So one of the things that hopefully maybe we can work on and look at through this possibility is being able to educate them as well to say, hey, this Marine, they may have a certain skill set, not quite what you're looking for, but do you have an internship program for them? Do you have some training that can take a person who may not have that background? Those headhunters don't know that. They've got great patriotic hearts. They want to go ahead and hire everybody. But you put, an 18-year-old kid, 19-year-old kid, in some senior position at Booz Hamilton, he's going to flame out. They just don't have that.
Yeah.
They'd always come to us saying, we want to give them this, $100,000 job, a year job. Great. Kid's not set up for it. So we kind of have to temper expectations. But talking about that guy and other headhunters, if we can get them that information and say, this is what you got. You've got dedicated people. You're going to get the job done, but you're going to have to meet them halfway in terms of making sure they're the right fit for you. And if they're not, how do you get a mission ready?
Sounds like that could be another project for you. Sounds like that's a great setup for something like a lead generation. You could kind of be the middleman connecting young veterans to employers who are actually interested in hiring people, but don't necessarily know what kind of background that soldier has.
Yeah, that sounds like a good possibility. I'd be on that.
Also, for revenue stream ideas, I was thinking, there's a lot of podcasts out there that actually have sponsorships. For example, like the Smart Passive Income podcast, Pat Flynn, he has sponsorships, I think, that rotate out about every 3 weeks to a month. And maybe that's something that you can approach, like Wells Fargo or USAA, so that they can actually sponsor your podcast and maybe even expand your reach on the people that you are providing that podcast to.
Hey, I'd be on that like white on rice.
No, yeah, that's a good point to bring up, too. I'm going to go ahead and add that here. Go ahead, Antonio.
I just love it because, it's one of those things. We want a big sponsor, someone that can come in and take care of us, but we all start small. And just to get somebody, one of the best pieces of advice I got with finding sponsors is find people that are already sponsoring and already spending money on that area. So, I mean, who, you know, when I go through, if we look through newsletters, who's already spending money and, you know, going after advertisers that's kind of in our space that you could get in front of? But it may be even something that you take on a few smaller sponsors initially. And what about, I'm curious, what about like crowdfunding? I don't know if it would work, but did you look at anything like Kickstarter or anything like that, trying to rally some of the troops together that way?
You know, quite frankly, I have not even approached that just yet. You know, quite frankly, you know, thinking, you know, I've got a civilian job, you know, Navy job, so I'm not hurting. You know, I always use more money, but I, you know, I'm not bootstrapping necessarily in terms of really looking for money. But that might be a possibility. Although what I'd have to kind of turn to is to really exhibit the value and what we're looking to do. And also what I think I'd have to do is get a proof of concept to say, hey, dudes, this is what we're doing. These are the numbers that we're hitting. Can you help support us? And, you know, at whatever level you want to do. So it's a possibility. But quite frankly, I have not gone into that.
Well, what I see is on like Indiegogo and some of these creative ones. I mean, I saw the guys over at Put This On. They're a San Francisco-based men's style website. And they did a series of videos. And, I mean, they put together, I think it was 10 videos. They asked for had to be at least $70,000. Maybe it was only 8 videos that they put together, which kind of cracked me up because I'm like, man, I could produce a whole bunch of videos for that much money. But but the point was, is these guys dove in and they leveraged the existing audience already on this platform. So they tried to drive traffic to it, but there's already people on Indiegogo and Kickstarter who are wanting to give to worthwhile projects. They basically, it's almost like a donation thing, and they get addicted to finding cool projects to donate to. Also, you share some of the, if you're on Kickstarter or Indiegogo, you actually get a little bit of their credibility simply by being on there. So right now, you know, no one knows you as having credibility in the space. So, but if you put your first sales page, you know, kind of Joe's expertise out there, you put your first sales page on a platform like that, you actually borrow their credibility. So whenever you're sending, and then you can then approach contacts at USAA or some of these other big companies and just say, hey, I'm doing this project here, and you're on a legitimate website, which they've seen other people raising money on. Oh, and this is the first project I've seen in a sense that is trying to raise money for something that's a shared cause, that's something we believe in.
Yeah.
That'd be cool. You know, quite frankly, my little head has not gone over there. My brain hasn't grouped it, not approached that. But, I'd jump on that. And, Joe, you know, if I can work with you too to maybe look at a lead page, I think I should hopefully have my 21 sessions ready to go within the next 2 weeks to go ahead and get those knocked out. They may not be shiny, et cetera, you know, just look like a brand new car, but hey, it's going to start up and get it done.
But you still, you know, and there's the what half of your job, once you've got those 21, that's only half of it. The other half is Derek Halpern. If you're not familiar with him over at Social Triggers, what he talks about, the other half is promotion. And I'm thinking that there's a lot of groups that, you know, the thing, let's talk about the guys over at Stop Soldier Suicide. Are you familiar with them, Mike?
I'm familiar with a lot of groups, but not that particular one.
So those guys, we helped them last year raise quite a bit of money. And suicide is something that I saw a lot in the Marine Corps. My friend, I've had enough. I mean, we were on the ship on the USS Denver, and it was Christopher Shea. I mean, the lieutenant, I mean, he was a friend of mine. We were both lieutenants. And I get a call from my CO, it's like 5 o'clock in the morning. And basically, he hung himself in the chaplain's private, it's just a bad situation. I mean,
I heard the story. Yeah, it was bad.
This is back in 2001, or was it 2002? I mean, we were it was just a horrible situation. And so I've got a personal interest, but it's not limited just to suicide. And I mean, these guys with suicide, they've already been raising money. They've already kind of built a presence. I would think that, you know, things related to PTSD, it's near and dear to their heart. And a lot of these guys, I mean, they would be able to bring you in and share maybe some of their, hey, we've got this guy, he donates, you know, this company is really big and they've got more they need to donate. They can only donate, you know, 20,000 to each organization though. Let us make an introduction to you. So that may be something to look at other military organizations like Stop Soldier Suicide so that they can make introductions to, it basically it's a shared cause, you know, helping veterans.
Yeah, and one thing, and again, this maybe is a conversation for a different time, especially with what we're trying to get done here, but one of the things I've got to sit down and really think of is to say, okay, let's say I do find sponsors and, you know, 50,000, whatever. I've got to get my head wrapped around what are they, is that for me, and I can either plow that back into the business, I'm able to pocket part of that, but I've got to, at least through my mind, go through the, what's for me and what's for the project, and I've got to make that separation in my head. You make sense with that?
Yeah. That we could go, that's a whole nother path. In fact, I'm working on a personal finance for entrepreneurs, which is not part of what we'll cover, but I probably will run it by you guys at some point, because it's one of those things we feel great when we throw all the money back into our businesses. The problem is it's not just about us. It's about us, our families, our kids, and we've got to make time for things, and it's hard to make time for something when it's just a passion project, because passion projects eventually become prisons if you can't escape from them. But I would say that, you know, growing your customer base is a great way. If they want that money to go to, if you really want to be able, I mean, there's a way to acquire customers. Next Tuesday, I know Tom's floating the idea around, I'll have a guy with me, Ryan Masters. He's coming to visit me. He's amazing at pay-per-click and acquiring customers. I mean, if you really want to get in front of people and raise awareness, doing a Facebook campaign, doing a YouTube campaign, and in a sense, your return on investment is customer acquisition, you know, you can figure out a way to really get in front of a lot of people. And that would be something that, if you had $1,000 that you could spend per month for, you know, 12 months, you can really skyrocket the amount of people that you're able to reach.
I've been that too as well. You know, you're the YouTube guy. I would have no heartburn. I've got, some basic materials to do some videos. I mean, we could try and knock those out.
Yeah, I think one of the things coming back to this is knowing that once you build out these different sessions and build out your website a little bit, you have something for people to come back to and sign up for. That's when you can start, I think, messing around with those alternative campaigns to drive traffic and awareness to what you're doing. So yeah, it's like Antonio said, half the battle is putting that stuff up, or at least like 20% of the battle, and the other 80% is promotion once you put it up, is to get that there.
And Mike, just to let you know, there's a lot of stuff coming in on the comments. Joe is saying, you know, could you run trial run at the base Family Readiness Center, do a webinar there, possibly get a 501c help. I think the process just got significantly easier. That's Jeremy, Substance Abuse Center, talking with them. So Mike, are you able to see the comments and see what people are throwing out for you?
I'm sorry, I just answered a 9-year-old little girl's question. Can you repeat the question?
Are you able to see the comments?
Yeah, I am.
Okay, yeah, there's a lot of people throwing out some stuff to you there in the chat. So definitely, feel free to jump in there. And
government contracting, again, if they are on board with government, with podcast, supporting podcast, I'd be good with that as well. Just working with people in, in the Marines with the cameras, combat camera, usually that's their bailiwick, but hey, I'm willing to look at everything.
Sounds good. And I'm replying to people right now, by the way, and I do see we're getting some questions. Marianne was asking about Soldiers to Summit. I just sent out the link so you guys can see what I was talking about, Wells Fargo. You'll have to do a little bit of research, but yeah, they just donated, or they're pledging quite a bit of money. Joe, jump in. What do you want to say?
Hey, sir, can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. Actually, if you check out, I'm not sure where you're at right now on the planet, but if you check out the Veterans Business Outreach Center, which is funded by the SBA, it's free. and their whole job is to give you a one-on-one counselor. To it's only for veterans and their family members, like your spouse or your children or whatever, to start up that family business. But they will sit down with you, and they can explain that way better, getting government contracts and everything else, because they're the experts on it. They're funded by the SBA. SBA teaches the boost to business, all that other stuff, also with the Small Business Development Center as well. So I think the VBOC would be the best start.
I guess, again, it's the Veterans Business Outreach Center?
Yes. You can just Google it. It goes by regions or by state, depending on how big your state is.
If you're in the Northwest, Joe, could you post that in the Facebook group?
Yeah, got it. Perfect. Dropped the whole sheet with a bunch of different mentors earlier, but I'll do it again.
Thank you.
Good stuff. And I see that we've also got some other, Jeremy made a great point about crowdfunding. I see people all the time now, hey, will you pay for my college education? And some of these stories, I mean, if it's a good presentation, they're getting people to pay for them to go to a $30,000 a year college. Other times when it's done not well, they're getting questioned, you know, why in the world are you asking me to pay for you to go get a computer degree to learn how to make websites when you could just do that on your own? So it is something, and we can talk offline about, you know, being able to create a emotionally powerful video. In fact, Joe is training up. I mean, this is where we're talking about the very beginning of this presentation, where sales copy, understanding a sales page, because you want to sell you want to sell them why this is important. Why it's worth investing in this, their time, their money, their resources, and why it's worth listening to your podcast.
Very cool. I like I said, this has been a wonderful, wonderful session.
Yeah. And I'll say this before we hit the last couple of things. While I don't suggest it for everybody, for something like this, if you're also just alternative revenue streams in terms of, or at least monetization strategies, Pay What You Want works really well when there's some kind of cause or charity behind it. And so in a situation like PTSD, that could be, and dealing with a situation like that, that could be something where I think a Pay What You Want type model would work really well. And I can talk to you in more detail about how I would deploy that if I was you, or at least for, you don't have to do it for everything, but maybe for one line of something, and I can show you how to do that.
Okay.
Go ahead.
In a different time, I had shot you an email here a little while ago. You know, I got to thank you guys again. I mean, we're getting value outside the wazoo for what we paid for you guys. So, again, thank you so, so very much. I was sharing with Tom, you know, I've been on the Facebook.
Hey, wait a minute, Mike. Thank you. The course is over, people. Like, thank you. We're done.
Yeah, but... but one thing, maybe you guys at a later time could really, maybe I've missed a few things, but really, what all do we have available to us? I think a lot of times we say, hey, we're with High Speed Low Drag, but we may not be taking advantage of the full potential of what you guys are offering to us. I know I'm not, and I really want to.
That's a good piece of homework for me. I'll form a video, and we'll show you not just what's in the course, but we'll talk about. And we've got something Tom and I have been looking at. Okay, you know, because we are building this course to suit you, such as I didn't expect that I'd be teaching, having Joe meet with my top programmer to learn how to create sales pages and optimize press and copywriting and stuff. I didn't know this, but we realize how valuable this is if he wants to make money as soon as he can. Like, it's not, we're not going after passive income. This is more teaching him how to consult. But yeah, we can go ahead and do that. I've got that written down as my homework.
Yeah, and I know Marianne had asked about the video for this last week, and I think Constantine just mentioned it as well in the Facebook group. So I apologize, guys. We'll get that out, and we'll get the SOP, or we'll get the SOP written up for how that'll be posted from now on. So once this recording is done, we'll let you guys know where you can expect to find it. We'll probably do a lot of that through the Facebook group.
Yeah, and don't forget, you guys have my phone number. You can call me at midnight and say, Antonio, get me that darn recording. Where are you doing over there? You know, it's like you're dealing with a pregnant wife and stuff. I mean, that's no excuse.
I challenge everybody to take them up on that offer.
Yeah, hey, here's the deal. I'm a chaplain. I'm going to pray for you.
Thank you. No, seriously, guys. I mean, you know, that's why we want to have these one-on-ones so early. We know a lot's coming your way, and you know, we really appreciate you guys helping us build this course to exactly what you need it to be. So we basically provide value.
Yeah. So I'm going to wrap up here, and then we're going to go to more of a Q&A for everybody. But the last couple things we have to hit on, cost structure. So we were talking about revenue. It sounds like right now that Mike hasn't identified exactly what his revenue stream is going to be, but he's got a lot of ideas, potential ideas, which, and there's nothing necessarily wrong with this, in my opinion, and I could be off base there, but I think this is fine because what your focus here is building the audience, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that, putting that forward. That was exactly what John Dumas did, and he, because once he was able to get his downloads up to a certain amount, he was able to do sponsorships, and then when he showed everybody how much money he was making from sponsorships, he was able to dovetail that into teaching. His first product, I don't know if you guys remember this, was like, I think it was an ebook, and then he published it on Kindle, and then he tried a bunch of other stuff that you probably have never seen until he hit upon building an e-course and building a community around podcasting. But what he did first was build that audience so that he could test ideas, and there's nothing wrong with that at all. But just know what's in your back pocket of what you can do with this is important, because coming over to cost structure, you're going to find that there's going to be costs associated with whatever you do. Not only the sunk cost of gear, and then potentially, yeah, coaching and things like that, but also paying yourself, because here's the deal. Unless it's just a hobby, you need to get paid. And at the end of the day, even if it is a hobby, you still need to get paid if you really want to expand it. So this is a question, though, for you to take back, Mike, and start thinking through this and saying to myself, what do I need to run this? If you're going to do it part-time, what do you need to run it part-time? And then if you got extra money, if you generated extra revenue, kind of like you were saying, especially if you're going to do a 503 or whatever, or a 501, something like that, you're going to have to get kind of specific about how you use your cash flow. But just think, remember, the lifeblood of any business is cash. So even if you're a charity, the lifeblood of a charity is cash. It's going to be what's coming in, and that's going to allow you to operate. So you need to think, because you're going to have to cover expenses as you move forward. So I think this is good. This is reasonable. And I think you could easily generate the amount of money to cover this going forward. But it's going to come down to how you actually want to monetize.
Well, I want to monetize it quick because I owe you guys money. And the quicker I get you guys paid off, the quicker I can do more, and maybe do a different way of coaching, use what you guys have, but then continue to really push myself to say, hey, what can we do? Because really, you know, the potential here is unlimited. I mean, it's as much as I want to do.
Yeah, and the big thing you're going to find out as you work through this, and again, this is a living document, everyone. I know I keep saying that, but it's like this is something you work through and you'll continue to bounce different ideas around and mess with this, and it's going to tweak the rest of this, but it's going to be not just messing around on paper in your head, but in the real life. So you take this and then you go act on it. So the next thing Mike's going to do is actually go ahead and produce the first 21 podcasts, and then he's going to put that out to the world, and then he's going to go after his customer segment by hitting up his early adopters first. Then he's going to approach every channel that he's written out, and he's going to go through them methodically, reach out to them, driving people to this podcast series, which he's going to have set up with an opt-in page that people opt in and he gets their email information. Isn't that right? And that's exactly how this is going to drive traffic. And what's going to happen is he's going to find that some channels work and some don't. He's going to find that some of these early adopters were spot on and some were wrong. And he's going to find that maybe the customer segment maybe isn't so much veterans with PTSD, but family members really resonate with the message. You don't know. This is what you're going to find, though, that things are not always going to pan out. But then you adjust this and you adjust your canvas here, and you keep engaging, and then you realize, okay, now that I've gotten this, it's building traffic, I'm getting subscribers, now what's the next thing? Maybe it's the next 21 session, or maybe it's continuing, instead of going straight to another 21-day session, which you could, maybe you exhaust your promotion efforts for this to promote this to the point where you just want to throw up, and then you get so many subscribers that now then you go into your 21-day session for families, and then you promote that, and so you want to throw up, and that could take a couple months of time right there. But now you've built up such a huge user base, now you can go ahead and decide how you want to generate revenue stream from. That's just one way. But the important thing here is to build this out and then actually test in the real world.
Hey, Tom, I want to talk to you offline if I can, because as you said, you know, certainly getting the product made is one thing, but then the promotion. And quite frankly, my promotion, I know about as much about promotion as I do about nuclear physics. And I didn't get through Algebra 1.
Sure, yeah. I'll get like people out on the street spinning signs for you. No, I'm just kidding. That'd be pretty sweet, though. No, for sure, Leah. Let's definitely talk offline. And again, take notes on this stuff. Think about the questions that you have as you go through this and whatever concerns you have or thoughts you have, like how do I do X, Y, or Z? Write them down, and me, Antonio, and John will take a look at them and help you out for sure.
Hey, appreciate it. Let me stop. I really feel like, you know, I've gotten a lot out of you guys, but I want to make sure we open this up. Can we go ahead and open it to everybody now?
Yeah. I think we've already talked on the UVP and the unfair advantage, so I think we're good here, guys. So go ahead, let's unmute yourselves if you want and just speak up if you got a question or thoughts.
Now I'm looking Joseph, in the looking right now in the comments. I don't see.
Joseph podcast is 10,000 to get iTunes sponsors. I'll challenge you on that, Joe, and say that I've gotten sponsorship for something with much less. Not on the podcasts, but you can get sponsorship for anything at any amount. But a lot of it's going to come down to who you're actually approaching, what relationships you've built up, and what the return is for them. And I'll give you a quick example because I think it's important. My magazine, Bootstrapped, it has maybe we have like 150 paid subscribers right now, which isn't terrible, but it's not great. But what I did was, but it's not enough. 150 people is not enough for anybody to actually advertise to. But I still reached out to people that I knew and people that were associated in some way in helping me produce this thing, including I sold it via Gumroad. So I reached out to Gumroad and said, hey, would you guys like to be a sponsor? And they said yes, and they were cool with it. Because, hey, this is me selling on their platform. I'm generating a lot of revenue from them. They were happy to sponsor it for X amount of dollars. And I did that also with John at Entrepreneur on Fire. I was like, hey, man, put your logo on this, and let's get you sponsored on this thing. And it worked. And so those connections you make and those people, it doesn't have to be a massive audience that you have. If you reach out to the right people for the right reasons, and you give them a good reason to an incentive, it doesn't necessarily just have to be the amount of people that you have listening to your podcast. Marianne, yeah, absolutely, we could. Sorry, I got a message. I would love to look at yours, Marianne. In fact, I might be able to pull it up now. Sorry, go ahead, Antonio.
No. I just I know a couple guys are having to head out now, and I will have to be heading out here soon. But go ahead and just FYI, guys, for next Tuesday, if you are interested, I know it's a bit different time. We've been having the Thursdays, but I know a few of you guys – it's very hard to meet on Thursday, so we want to break this up occasionally, maybe on Tuesdays, have a time. So I'm looking to bring in Ryan Masters on Tuesday. I know Tom's going to be passing around some other ideas for different times.
Yep. Let's see. What I'm showing here real quick is this page. I guess this is where I've learned just about everything I've learned when it comes to this Canvas stuff, and it's from Ash Maria, PracticeTrumpsTheory.com blog. And this is just one of his blog posts, and these things are just ridiculously in-depth. So we talked about minimal viable product to landing page, which is something that we're all going to be dealing with pretty soon here, if we're not already. What's the idea of taking this page, this Canvas that you have, and setting up a splash page? And he goes through how he went through iteration after iteration of headlines and images and text and colors. All these are different variations. And he just goes through, like, look at, there's so much stuff, tweaking that he did to figure out what actually worked. And it's just this kind of resources, it just goes in to show you that, in my opinion, that your first idea might not be the best idea. It may work, which is great, but if it doesn't mean it's a failure. This thing was still a successful business that he built. What he goes through, it shows the process of iteration he went through to get there, to actually get people to land on his page and become subscribers.
I'm going to post his website in the Facebook group. I think it's solid.
Quick question, and it is a little bit off topic, but I wanted to kind of get a feel for how you guys approach people for sponsorships, specifically someone that you think is more of an A-lister in your niche or in your market, and see if they'd be willing to do like maybe a sponsorship or an affiliate program with you, even though you may not have like be in a position where you can offer a lot of value to them. Do you guys have any like recommendations on that?
Can you, I'm sorry, I apologize. Can you repeat that one more time? I was trying to answer a question in the comments.
Oh, sure. How do you approach people who may have a bit more authority in your niche or mm-hmm. maybe consider like an A-list blogger and see if they'd be interested in doing a sponsorship or a partnership with you?
Okay. So if you're reaching up, I'll tell you what. If you're just looking for sponsorship, that's tough if you don't have some kind of numbers to back it up. Right. So if I was to get like like Ash or something like that, like, hey man, I'm doing something similar, or I'd love for Practice Trump's Theory to, well, first of all, I don't think he actually sponsors anything, so you can nix that. So one, you want to first actually find people that are actually sponsoring things already. Right. So hypothetically, I'm trying to think of thing people that, Fizzle, Fizzle.co, Corbett Barr, those guys sponsor. I'm sure of it. I know it. I've seen them sponsor things before. At least I think. I could be wrong there. Actually, anyway, so it would help to have an example. But the point is some people you know actually do sponsor things. And so if I was to reach out to them, the only way I would reach out to somebody like that, one of the best ways that would probably be, if I don't have the numbers to back it up, like if it's for a podcast, yeah, you would need probably a certain number of podcast downloads to reach out and say, this is how many podcast downloads I have. So you tell them the stats. This is who the demographic is. These are people that are in your demographic, so they'd come back to you. You basically just do a, you do a pitch to them basically, and you show them what you're providing and how they can get involved, and essentially transparently show what value you'd be providing to them to be a sponsor, like how you'd feed traffic back to them. You have the numbers. Go ahead, Antonio.
I've got two quick, things I have to throw in, Brian, but I agree that, Tom made a great point. Don't try to get someone to do something that they're not already doing. It's a harder sell. But I mean, Tom, you were talking about John, how he sponsored an event for you or something like that.
He sponsored last issue of Bootstraps.
And part of that's probably because you've worked with him on a project, right?
Correct. For sure. It's because we're working on High Speed Low Drag.
Yeah, together. We've talked to get a multiple times. There's a huge trust factor. So oftentimes you need to get in front of. So I would say, Brian, for you, if you're going to be doing something, let's say in the sushi world, find out where the sushi conference is at. Travel to it. Physically meet the superstars. The lines are much smaller than you think they're going to be, especially if you are dead set on shaking somebody's hand. I mean, for me, it blew me away when I went to New Media Expo and I got to meet all of these people who I had been reading about, and I shook their hands. I made sure I knew how to make a connection, and all of a sudden I'm talking with Amy Porterfield, Mari Smith. Now, normally these people are impossible to get a hold of when it comes to Facebook and Facebook marketing. But actually, James Wedmore is a great example. I knew what he looked like, and he's big in video on YouTube. And I see him. I know who he is. We're at InfusionCon. No one's talking to him. He's talking with Devin Duncan, who is the husband of Melanie Duncan of Pinterest fame. But no one knows really who they are. So I go up, and I introduce myself. And what I tell him, where he tracked me down, is I followed your advice, and now I've got – I think I mentioned at that time I had like 3-4 million views on YouTube and 50,000 subscribers. Thank you. You are a testament. I have learned some great things, but I've never bought his course. I simply listened to his interview on Mixergy years ago. And instantly he's wanting to track me down because I am a proof that his
case study.
Exactly. I'm a case study. I am living proof that he is awesome. So of course he's going to try, and then we end up having dinner. Now, it's like private ways to be able to get a hold of him. He's kind of an introvert, but there are probably people in your industry who have just blown you away and influenced you. Find a way to get through. Tim Ferriss talks about this. I mean, it's sometimes not even them, but it could be their wife who's their back end partner. John Dumas, a lot of people don't know, but Kate is running all the back end for Entrepreneur on Fire. And at conferences, he gets mobbed. But a lot of people don't know who Kate is. Kate's just starting now to come out of her shell.
Presenting now.
Yeah, she's now putting some stuff out there as under her brand and stuff. But if you really connect with Kate, and that's how you're going to have a huge, you're going to be able to get those ways in. So, now, that would be really quick for me, is actually travel someplace and shake their hands, meet them, and form those real relationships.
And I'll say this kind of dovetails off that. And Antonio, if you can confirm the time for Tuesday, I don't know if we can confirm that, or do we still need to talk?
I think we need to make sure it's good to go with John. He's the one that I know is really having trouble making these Thursdays, so we want to make sure it's right for him. We'll just wait till we've confirmed that, right?
Okay, so just FYI, sorry about that, Marianne. So I'll I'm going to reach out to everybody tonight, tomorrow, and try to square away a time, and then I'll let you know as soon as I can. But also on this note, on the sponsorship thing, sponsorship, you know, it's just one of those things. It seems like the Holy Grail, and then you realize, more importantly, is creating like a revenue-generating product. Well, you know, because it's like, it's cool to get sponsorship for my magazine and all that, but I'd rather just get, at the end of the day, it's more important that I get subscribers and more important that I get sales, the magazine itself. Otherwise, who cares, right? So one is just to really take a hard look at why you're looking for sponsorship. It's just a monetization thing. You might be just better off being the sponsor yourself and selling your own products on your own platform. But then the second thing
is...
Fair point. Yeah, and then the second thing, though, is, and this is what I do, and I don't know why more people don't do this, is I try to, as much as possible, connect with people that I like or that I think I like because of what they do online, like Antonio and John, and then try to provide some kind of helpful service to them, which in this case it ended up working out to building out High Speed Low Drag and High Speed Elite. But I've done that through book publishing. I've done that with a number of different awesome people, in my opinion, that I really want to work with. We just launched a new book the other day, actually, with this guy, Dan Norris of WP Curve. And it's because I'm reaching out there and saying, hey, I'll do this stuff for you if you're interested, or I'll take and I'll compile your, I'll do all the work. You don't have to do anything. You just have to give me access and answer some questions, and I'll publish your book, and we'll see what happens. And then usually it's not see what happens. Well, obviously we're going to have some kind of goal in mind. And in the case of this guy's book recently, it was getting to the top of Amazon. And I'll say that because I'm constantly looking for where I can do something that adds value to somebody. Not just like, hey, where can I help you? But hey, I have this idea for something that'll resonate with your people and your brand that doesn't take much work on your part. I'll do all the grunt work, and then we'll split revenue or something like that. And that's how I've gotten, I don't know, 90% of my revenue generating activities. I mean, the nature of book publishing is just like that. But the point is, nobody comes to me as a book publisher. I have to go to them because it's an independent book publisher. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, yeah. And I didn't really think about it from that perspective, about, you know, instead of looking for more of a sponsorship, looking for more of a partnership, you know, where you're providing all the grunt work and actually providing value to them at the same time.
Yeah, and that, man, I'll tell you what, people are so busy, and if you, especially any name that you can think of that has some sort of audience, that person is probably busy. And if you, and the last thing they want is to deal with something that they have to say no to. But if you come at them with a value proposition that's well thought out, the worst case, you're going to get a no, but you're going to probably get a thank you as well. And I've done that with some people, and they were just not in the position to do a book or anything like that. But they were thankful for the suggestion, and now they know me. And it's not, there's nothing negative and there's nothing bad there. It totally ends on a positive state because I came with a well-articulated, well-thought-out plan to help them make more money, which is hard to say no to in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Tom, I might reach out to you offline and continue this conversation a little bit more.
Cool. All right, guys. Probably closing up the time here. I don't know if Antonio's already jetted.
No, I'm still here.
Oh, you are. Okay.
Can't see me?
I turned up my...
Yeah. All right. Well, I've got some recordings I have to get out. I know you guys have been asking for them. That's on me. So I'm working to get that out. But Friday, got to get it done tomorrow. It'll happen. Boom.
Perfect.
All right, guys. Anything else?
Joe, I think I got a question from Joe. Joe, I'm gonna answer this one offline, Joe. Is that cool? I'm just going to go ahead and do that.